And the quote that this person shared was that that this really moved her. And this moves me as well, that you said to this person, the people we work for are in need. They are not needy. And I think what's key about that statement is work for, and that they are in need. So yes. Tell me a little bit about that philosophy, Tamara.
Well, again, thank you for just having me on, and thank you for asking me to clarify that, because I've had many people say to me, you work with the needy. And I'm like, well, no, I don't work with, I work for, meaning I serve those that are in need. People don't ask to be in these situations. And so I'm just a firm believer, Jenny, that words have power and they mean something to people. And so individuals who are low income or are in poverty, they didn't ask to be there, right? And so I don't want to, it degrades who they are when you say the needy people. Well, they're not needy, and I don't work with them. I do work alongside them, but I serve them, and that's what it's about. And so I just try to choose my words wisely. And for me, it's I work for individuals who are in need. And that need could be so many different things, right? And so so that's what I was trying to relay to the person that I was speaking with, which ended up nominating me.
Well, that's wonderful.
Power.
So I should clarify, Tamara Coleman is executive director of the Shalom Center in Kenosha. Tell us a little bit about the Shalom Center, and there is a lot going on, so I know you are very busy.
I am, but I'm very proud of the work that I get to go get up and do every day. So as you know, we're the only homeless shelter in Kenosha. And I just want to clarify, we're the only homeless shelter in the Kenosha County that takes general population. And that means we take anybody. Women's and Children's, who is our partner, they're a shelter as well, but they only take domestic violence. So we take domestic violence and everybody else, right? We also have a... our shelter has two different sides, Jenny. We have a single side, and then we have a family side where we can take up to 8 families at a given time. And then we also have a food program, and our food program has 2 components to it. One being our soup kitchen, which is what everyone really knows us for, is our soup kitchen. That's how we got started back in 1982 with Greta Hansen. And then our food pantry, which is our wonderful food pantry. It moved over here to our current location in 2020, and we're serving 11,500 unduplicated households a year. So that's the high level, Jenny, but you know, we have a lot of programming that goes within those programs. And so we're really proud of the work we get to do. And then I don't know if you want me to share, but I'm ready to share. We're expanding,
you Please know. Do. Please share.
Yeah, so we're really excited. We were presented with an opportunity. We learned a lot during COVID. We just didn't sit around during COVID. We were very busy, but then we were also busy looking at our services and the individuals and clientele that were coming to us needing our service who had never needed services before, right? And so we discovered really quickly that people didn't know where to go to actually get the services that they were needing, whether it was rental assistance, whether it was gas cards, they just didn't know where to go. So we had this idea that we looked into the community and said, how can we help? And so we had a wonderful anonymous donor who gifted us $2.4 million, which is gonna pay for our building expansion. We're adding 10,500 square feet of space. We're breaking ground right now. It's all kind of dirty back there. Construction is going on. And we are going to have a resource center that's going to be our Hope Center, helping other people every day, our Hope Center. And that center is going to be able to provide immediate needs resources to individuals outside of our shelter, inside of our shelter, that just need the additional support. We want to be a one-stop shop, Jenny, where they'll be able to get dental, medical, behavioral health, partnering with Kenosha Community Health Center, Pillar Health, in those regards. And then also having a case manager that can direct those individuals right to the resources, not handing them off, actually managing and helping them through the process. So we're really excited.
That's great. When do you expect that to open tomorrow?
Well, we're getting the word of May. So I'm praying for wonderful weather through the winter here. We've been good so far. So we're hoping for a May open. We will also, Jenny, have a warming and cooling shelter as part of the resource center. So we'll be right in time for the summer heat and be able to help those that are unsheltered get out of the heat and you know, the inclement weather, and get some safety over their heads.
That's wonderful. So if that doesn't sound like enough, Tamara is also board chair of the Kenosha Community Health Pillar Health Board.
Yes.
You are a board member for the Kenosha Area Business Alliance. You are a board member for Building Our Future. You work with the Kenosha County Health Department. You serve on the Susan B. Anthony Women of Influence Awards Committee. Wow. You're amazing.
You missed some, but that's okay.
My goodness. Hi, you must have a very complicated calendar. What did I miss?
Here's what's funny. I tell people all the time, Jenny, and I have a wonderful work-life balance. I travel. My daughter is on the road all the time, so me and my husband fly out to see her wherever she's at. And I have a wonderful work-life balance. I'm involved in my church. My family comes first. But I'm also on the board of Kenosha Area Chamber, and I'm also on the board of Advocate Aurora. And so I have to give them a shout out as well, because I work tirelessly for them too.
you are amazing. And I know that's really, there's more, because I know of other things that you've been involved in. And you previously served as an elected official on the Kenosha Unified School Board.
I did. 6 years, 2 terms, and then 4 of those 6 years I was the president of the board.
Wow. Amazing. Now, you did mention you have 3 daughters. One is a famous musical actress, getting international attention. But all 3 daughters are super smart, super beautiful, take after their mom. And I think you might have a little one too, right?
I do. So my husband and I have 3 adult daughters. I have to put that in there, adults, because oh my goodness, we raised them. They're gone and grown and on their own. It's beautiful. But our oldest, who works for Kenosha Unified School District, her and her husband gave us our first granddaughter, and she's 2, and she is my life. And she was there yesterday when I received my award, on Monday, when I got my award, and just even having her say, "Tima, where are you?" when I was going up to get my award, or "Where are you going?" And it meant a lot. So yes, to have all my family there present, my girls are, those are my pride and joy, but it's amazing to watch them grow into their own careers and their own, own womanhood. It's amazing to watch and see. So my husband and I are very proud.
And you're just such a wonderful role model for them. That's just awesome.
Thank you.
You know, you work with a lot of young people. You have adult children, although they're still young. What advice would you give to young people in our community?
I would say actually 2 things. I said, one would be is to be persistent and consistent. When people tell me all the time, how proud I should be of my girls, and and they're so smart and talented and all this stuff. For me and my husband, it's like, yes, they are, and we're very proud of them and their talents and whatnot. But what's important for us is that they follow their dreams and their goals, and they're very persistent in what they do. Right. So I would say, don't let anyone tell you that you can't do something. And that sounds like a cliche, Jenny, but it's very easy for us to settle. And, when like when you and I think about like our life, you know, when I look back over the things that I could have done or should have done, or man, that's, you know, I wanted to be an attorney, believe it or not. And here it is, my youngest daughter is going to go to law school, you know. She had no idea until she was probably a senior in college that that's what I wanted to do. But, you know, life takes you on a different path. But I think persistence and being consistent as a human being is so important. Show up every time, being persistent and consistent in whatever you're fighting for, whether it's your own goals and dreams or that task or that movement that you're trying to, you know, impact change with. Just show up persistent and consistent and authentic, right? And the other thing I would say is, I talked a little bit about, you know, Martin Luther King said, what are you doing for others? Live a life of servanthood. Serve others first. Your reward and your blessings will come, but you just serve other people, because we're put here not, yes, to prosper and be, you know, healthy and wealthy and all these good things, right? But we're also put here to help others along their journey. And so I always say, if I've helped one person along my journey, just one, then my life wasn't in vain. My living wasn't in vain. So that's what I would tell people. I know that was a lot, but that's what I would probably tell people to do. Young girls, young women and men and whoever, just that's what I would say.
That is just beautiful and so inspiring. You just keep inspiring. I'm just so pleased to have talked to you today, Tamara Coleman, 2023 Humanitarian Award recipient. Thank you so much for spending a little time with us here today on Community Matters.
And thank you so much for having me, Jenny. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. My next guest is Dr. James Kinchin, who is a professor and director of choral arts at UW Parkside. He is one of the 2023 Humanitarian Award recipients at an event held at the 29th annual Martin Luther King Jr. celebration at Gateway Technical College. Good morning, Dr. Kinchin.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us today, and congratulations on this honor.
Well, I am just so highly honored, and I just so deeply appreciate that recognition. And, you know, much about it, all the way to the rich legacy that we have been beneficiaries of as a result of Dr. King's work, down to the other people who have received the honor and who, you know, going all the way back in the past, I am in distinguished company, and I'm just so honored.
Well, thank you. So your nominator said, I just have to find the, you talked about how you bring people together through music, and obviously you've had a wonderful career in teaching and bringing music to certainly southeastern Wisconsin and the entire nation. Tell me a little bit about bringing people together through music.
Well, I think that music has a way of doing that. I mean, sort of inherent in what music is and the way music is. When I look at music, and this is not just from a West African perspective, but when I look at the West African roots of music, it was almost always a communal activity. It was almost always done in ways that involved people, that brought people together, that often facilitated people doing communal things, whether those things were working together or playing or doing other tasks. Music was sort of central to that. And in all of the kinds of music that we do, the choral experience is particularly ideal for bringing people together. And I think there are ways that you can envision the choral experience so that it is relatively more elitist. It's possible to hear choirs, for example, who make music at the very top of the art, so to speak, because they have screened and vetted the people who sing there to have only the people who are the most gifted, the best trained. But on the other side of that, or the end of that spectrum, it's possible to envision the choral art not just as an elitist thing, or not as an elitist thing, but as an inclusive activity. And in my career, that's what I've tended to want to do. You know, how can I make it possible for other people who simply want to come and sing to be able to do that? And in the process, to have it an experience that is both fulfilling in all those ways that making music ought to be, but is also reflective of a level of excellence that is possible even with people who have little training and little experience and who may be viewed as people with ordinary talents. But once we get together and we work together and we pursue excellence, some incredibly wonderful things happen.
Great. That's very true. So you were born and raised in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes.
What role did music and choral music in particular play in your life that it inspired you to pursue that as a career?
Well, the decision to pursue it as a career came, you know, a little bit later in my upbringing. I can remember being very much excited by the church choir. And one way that I know that is that I would ask my daddy to bring tablets that I could draw on, and I would draw pictures of the church choir. And I remember that doing that as a preschooler. And when seventh grade came, in those times we had elementary for 6 years and then junior high school and senior high school. And my father took me to register, and the woman who was the choral director of the junior high school, who was also on our church music staff, asked me if I would sing with her. And I opened my mouth. I tell people this and they laugh, but it's a true story. I opened my mouth and I was going to give her an answer. I don't know what the answer was going to be. I can't sing, or I don't know, I guess so. I don't know what I was going to say, but I opened my mouth and my father spoke. And my father said, you know, three words. He said, yeah, he'll sing. and that was it. And I never regretted that. I didn't resent that at all. And I kind of grew as a young person in the choral experience, as an adolescent, sharing music with other adolescents under the direction of people who were really excited about choral music and who really wanted to help us develop and maximize ourselves, not just talent wise but as human beings. And so by the 10th grade it had become obvious to me that music was what I was supposed to be doing. And then it was just a matter of sort of finding out what in the field of music was my best fit. And I kind of explored some things, and I came back to my first love, which was choral music. I had become involved in music because of the choral experience in schools, and so I wanted then to be one who would be a leader and a teacher in the choral music setting. And as they say, the rest is history.
Right. You know, and people always talk about sports and the teamwork there, but I think we kind of give short shrift to the teamwork of choral arts.
Oh, yes.
Very important, isn't it?
Oh, it's hugely important. The choir is, and that's a really, really apt analogy. The choral experience is an experience that involves teamwork. The choir is really a musical team. And to the extent that you can get people in the choir to play well together, in quotes, you can get some amazing things to happen. And that kind of synergy that comes when people have agreed on, let's attain this particular goal, let's let's do the Nguzo Saba suite and perform that for audiences. That's a Kwanzaa suite that we've done periodically. Let's do Handel's Messiah and perform that. And then people begin to pull together and everybody sees a place for himself, for herself, for themselves in that team effort.
And it brings it back to that, your humanitarian award and the statement that you put a focus on unity and diversity, and that's certainly reflected in that choral experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Your questions, all of them are very apropos. The unity and diversity aspect is one that I think we have to sort of bring together. And to me, it's sort of maybe in the center of the continuum, because you could go to one or the other extreme. If you just have a group of people who are just singing together, and just focusing on all of the differences that they may bring to the table, it may be fun, but it's not a very good choir. And on the other hand, you have people who submerge their individual contributions to the point that it's just sort of a bland, kind of musical experience where people don't feel fulfilled and actuated on an individual level, then you've missed a whole lot. So you try to get sort of right in the middle there, where both of those things come into play. Everybody has something to offer, and you value that. And at the same time, you're wanting everybody to feel that they are part of something that truly is larger and grander and more beautiful than any one of them individually could produce.
Absolutely. So tell us about your subspecialty. You've really built a reputation on your knowledge about music history. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's music in general, music history is, I should say there is an actual academic specialty within music called music history. And so I'll make this big disclaimer up front. I'm not a music historian, okay? But I remember as a student in undergrad school that, like a lot of things are for undergrads, you know, there are courses that you have to take and you're hoping to pass and get a decent enough grade that it won't ding your GPA too much, and then that you can proceed on to graduation. And it was really in those years afterwards that I became a lover more generally of history, you know, not as a historian, but I became a lover of history and of music history particularly. And then as I did that, I understand how that history then affects the performance that I want to do with the people that I'm working with. And of course, then the subspecialty within that is African-American music. And to know something about that history, because it's a rich history, not a lot of people know about it. But what my forebears, my enslaved forebears who were brought here from Africa brought to the table was a musical contribution that has not only shaped American music. A lot of times we compartmentalize it and we think about African American music, and that's fine, but it has shaped the whole of American music, and it has shaped music around the world. I mean, just one trivial example, I had the opportunity in 2018 and again in 2019 to travel to China and to be a part for a little bit of an academic community in Wuhan, China. And I was talking to one of my wonderful Chinese student colleagues that I had a chance to work with as a part of the experience. And we were talking about popular music. And at some point he says, "Do you want to hear Chinese rap music?" I said, sure, let me hear some Chinese rap music. And I mean, you know, it was very authentic in lots of ways, except obviously the lyrics were not English lyrics. But I'm just using that as an example to say how deeply African contributions have influenced music worldwide, music globally. You know, even, you know, if you go come back to America, even the various forms of rock that came out of the early rock and roll. Rock and roll, a lot of people don't know that. Rock and roll came first as a form of African-American music. And early rockers, Elvis Presley, understood that. The Beatles understood that. A lot of people don't know the Beatles actually spent time with this group called the Temptations, trying to learn a little bit more about what they call the colored sound that they wanted to bring into their music.
Right. The blues had a baby and they called it rock and roll. Isn't that the?
Yeah.
Before we go, Dr. Kinchin, you know, so many people have said that you have influenced them. Who has influenced you?
Oh gosh, you're limited in how much time you can spend with me, and I could go on and on and on and on for days. So it starts with my parents, who were just amazing people. In all kinds of ways. And then the teachers who taught us, I said this, and I think it bears repeating, people who taught us in that very segregated world that I grew up in with missionary zeal. I mean, they were really intent on helping to prepare us for what they saw correctly, to be a better and brighter day when we would have opportunities that they didn't have. And so it takes a whole lot of courage to teach people within those segregated walls to be prepared for life once those segregated walls are not there or have been minimized. My choral directors, Ruby Piaskew, Alpha Hayes Moore, junior, senior high school, were huge influences on me. And there's just a plethora of people, mentors that I had, people who were 10, 5, 10, 15 years ahead of me, but who were doing music, most of the music educators in my hometown, who made themselves available to me when I had questions, when I wanted to talk, you know, hey, let's go to this concert. And all of those kinds of things that were just so invaluable to this young guy at the time. So there's so many influences, but the gist of the question is absolutely true, and I'm able and happy to bear witness that I am whatever I am today, not because of myself, but because of all of the people who were a part of that village that helped to raise this child.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Kinchin. It was great talking to you, and congratulations again on your award.
My pleasure. Thank you for this honor and this opportunity.
This is WGTD HDFM 91.1, and my next guest is 2023 Humanitarian Award recipient at the 29th Annual Martin Luther King Day event at Gateway Technical College, Scott Terry. Mr. Terry is the visionary and the owner of Mahogany Black Arts and Cultural Center in Racine. Welcome, Mr. Terry.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Jenny. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to this conversation.
And, you know, I just want to read a little bit about how you are described as an artist and your vision at Mahogany Gallery, because I think this is a great description. Scott Terry is a Wisconsin-based artist whose work is a look into the power, presence, and lives of the Black diaspora using oil, pastels, watercolor, and other mediums. He weaves his ideas and themes into beautiful portraits of life and history. Wow, that's a beautiful description. Tell me a little bit about your journey to art.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, it's you know, I really get my creativity from my mother. She's really you know, very creative herself. You know, she's you know, she's always supported you know, my artistic endeavors as a kid, and encouraged me as an adult to pursue those. So, you know, I'm thankful for her to, you know, seeing it in me when I didn't see it in myself, and really pushing me and challenging me to you know, pursue that route. You know, I wasn't always an artist, and I wasn't always you know, practicing artist, but really more like a hobbyist, and, you know, doing art on the side. You know, it wasn't until I became older and you know, more established in my life that I realized that it's something that is a passion of mine, and a direction that I should take career wise. So it's been a fun ride. I've worn a lot of hats in my life, from being a teacher to athlete, you know, community activist, and supporting the community in various ways. So that continues to go on. But I also do, you know, really more intentional about my own art practice and the practice of other artists as well.
Wonderful. And really the gallery and the cultural center bring all of your past professions and skills kind of to the forefront, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a big segue and a big connection. You know, I used to wear my former hat as a public school educator. You know, I left education only to find out that I'm still in education.
Right.
Just another capacity, and really being more on my own terms. So, you know, the combination of, you know, teaching around the arts, and also culture, and also history. Those are three of the main, you know, spaces that we operate in here at the Mahogany Gallery and Mahogany Black Arts and Cultural Center. So those themes are really centric to what we do. And they all work together. They all are connected. So history, our culture, and the arts.
Tell me a little bit about what we would see in terms of art at the gallery.
Yeah, sure. Well, you'd see a variety of different styles of work. We rotate group shows approximately every 2 months, around that ballpark. And, you know, this particular show that we have on now, we actually have two shows going on simultaneously. This is the Duality Show, which is a show about the abstract work, and showing work in that genre that you typically would not see with artists of color. So we're, you know, educating the public and patrons about historically about our presence as abstract artists, and also the subgenres of abstraction. We currently have six artists in this particular show. Nehemiah Edwards, Jawan Johnson out of St. Louis, Stanwyck Cromwell out of Connecticut, and Quirky out of Baltimore, Ashley Dallas out of Milwaukee, and then we also have Lawrence Terry out of Boston, Massachusetts. So you'd see a variety of different styles of abstract work in this show, as well as the show that we just kicked off, a youth show with a collaboration with Racine Unified School District. And that is the second annual MLK art contest that we kick off on the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, for January 16th every year. So this year we have about 20 young people from kindergarten through 12th grade who submitted work, artwork for to enter into the show. So really excited about that. It was a really cool work. At pastels, we have you know, paintings, we have collage work, we have also have essays, because that was also a part of the submission. So you submitted art as well as written essays as well. So there's a combination of things that you would see here at Mahogany Gallery and the Mahogany Backyards and Cultural Center. So, and also including a historic exhibit that we have here about the history of Juneteenth Day celebrations here in Racine.
Oh, that sounds great. So tell me about the genesis of the idea for the cultural center and the history.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, one of the problems that was identified was that if I were to ask you or anyone, you know, if they wanted to learn about the history of Black people in Racine County as a whole, you know, where would you go? Where would you go to learn that information? And the reality is that there is no place for you to physically go to. So we set out to solve that problem. And you know, now we have become Racine County's first physical home for the preservation, research, and exhibition of Racine County Black history. So I'm really excited about, you know, about that. You know, being first to do that, and also really capturing that that history to again continue to educate and empower our visitors to you know, to the gallery and the Black Arts and Cultural Center. So it really came from an idea of filling a need, and also a platform for people to you know, to learn and to be educated. You know, when you think about Racine County, it's really rich in ethnic and cultural diversity. So you'll see a lot of, you know, people representing a lot of different cultures. And you'll see some of that in the food in the community. You'll see some of that in the restaurants. You'll see that in some of the architecture around this community. And, but we don't really see a lot of artifacts or things that showcase and represent the contributions of people of color to this community. So that's one thing that we set out to solve.
What a great addition to the community. Through that work, has there been anything about Racine's history that surprised you, that you learned that you didn't know?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of things, you know. You know, one of the things that you know, I discovered was that you know, Black folks have been here in Racine County since the beginning, doing, you know, the same things we're doing now, you know, organizing, building, being entrepreneurs, you know, fighting against racism and systematic oppression, organizing. So, you know, we have in Racine, we have two of the oldest Black churches in the state of Wisconsin are here in Racine. So, that's pretty telltelling about the organizing and the work and the collective, community, that Black folks have been able to create here in Racine County. And there are enclaves of Black entrepreneurs in the 20s, 1920s, and the 1800s, 1930s, you know, every decade and generation since the beginning of Racine, and we've had a presence in. So there's a lot of history here. It's just not really, you know, preserved that well or, you know, communicated that well. So that's something we're set out to fix, so people, you know, can know these contributions, know the players and these different times of our existence here in Racine County, going back to the 1800s.
That's wonderful. You're bringing that to light. You've got some events coming up, and some big ones. You want to talk about the Black Tie Gala?
Yeah, absolutely. So so the big one, it's our second annual Wisconsin Black Art and Culture Expo, which is a 2-month-long celebration of during Black History Month, February and March, of Black creativity and contributions in the arts. So I'm really excited about that. That's our very big annual event that encompasses an art show. It's really collaborative. This year, I'm really excited about our partnership with the America's Black Holocaust Museum. We're taking a field trip, taking about 30 students to America's Black Holocaust Museum for a tour, as well as the same students will be coming here, stopping here in Racine for a time, and then we're loading up a bus and heading up to the Black Holocaust Museum. I'm excited about that. And we also have the art show, which is called Black Futures. We have about 10 artists from across the United States that are depicting visual interpretation of Black futures, what that looks like around the world. So I'm excited about that art show that kicks off at the University of Wisconsin Parkside during the Black Tie Gala, which is a Harlem Renaissance themed Black Tie Gala. I'm really excited about that. That's a partnership with the University of Wisconsin Parkside. So over the course of these next 2 months, and we have 12 events that take place in Kenosha, Racine, and Milwaukee. So that's something I'm really excited about to have and to be a part of and really lead. So this is the only expo of its kind in the state of Wisconsin, and it's the largest celebration of Black History Month in the state of Wisconsin, and possibly in the United States. The last year we had, in 2022, we had over 3,000 participants, in both online and in person. So this year, hope to, at least match that, if not increase that. So that's something I'm really, really excited about.
That's going to be outstanding. So how can people get more information about these upcoming events, the gallery and the cultural center?
Sure. You go to mahoganygallery.com, www.mahoganygallery.com for more information about the expo, as well as art shows that are taking place, as well as other programming around the expo. There's also an event calendar on the website as well, so you can see all the dates and the times and locations of all these events.
Great. And it's been such a pleasure to talk to you, Mr. Terry. This is Scott Terry from the Mahogany Black Art and Cultural Center, the 2023 Humanitarian Award recipient. Thank you so much for being our guest here on WGTD FM 91.1. Community Matters.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. The pleasure was all mine. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.